From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska. This is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to The Gypsy Musher with our co-host, Hugh Neff, calling in from Tok, Alaska. Hugh, what's going on?
Oh, just a great day up here in Tok. We had a couple days of snow here recently, and being a person who likes to take advantage of the weather, I got my handler, Eric, out there on a double sled with me, and we ran a couple 20-mile training runs today with eight dog teams, and nice little workout not only on them but on us as well. So always feels great to be out on the sled early in the year, that's for sure.
Well, this is our second episode of the Gypsy Musher. On last week's show, we kind of gave a biography of what Hugh Neff is all about and his dog team at LaughingEyesKennel.com. He is an Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran. I don't know exactly how many you've ran. Tell us, Hugh. I think it's 19, correct?
Yeah. Believe it or not, did my first one in 2000, and this next Quest will be my 20,000 miler. So I've been keeping pretty busy over the years, and I always thought I had a lot of catching up to do compared to a lot of the guys I race against, like Ken and Lance. You know, they've been doing it since they were little kids, so I've been trying to learn as much as I can over these last decade.
So you're in the early 40s, I think 44, just a little bit older than I am, and a lot of the big guys, the big names, they've already retired from the Iditarod. Why in the world are you still going strong in your early 40s?
Oh, I don't know about that. A lot of the top mushers, believe me, they're all in their mid-50s, actually. I think that's the beauty of this sport. It's not only about how tough you are physically. It's much more about how tough and you are mentally, spiritually, and just, you know, how organized and how you keep the testosterone and even keel and have patience. And that's why I think you see a lot of your top mushers, your Didi Genros, Martin Boozers, Jeff Kings, Mitch, I could go on and on, Gebhardt, Johnny Baker. There's, you know, a plethora of great mushers that are not necessarily winning the races, but they're up in the top 10, top 15 every year. I mean, Sonny and Swenson and that whole crowd, too. So I still feel like a kid out there, to tell you the truth. I mean, like I said before, 44, but in Alaskan years, I've only been doing this for 15 years now, so I still feel like a little boy out there most of the time, and that's the beauty of it. I feel like I still have a lot to learn.
Well, and to some of those guys, it's a Brett Favre type of retirement, and they may just be back next year, right?
Oh, yeah, I know. I was sitting with Dan Caduce a couple of years ago at the Iditarod banquet when Jeff King was giving his retirement speech. We were just sort of giggling there going, this ain't real, because we know, you know, maybe some of us mushers know even more than the actual other mushers themselves how competitive those people are. And a fellow like Jeff King has been doing this for quite a long time, and who's, you know, a master at his craft. It's got to be pretty tough for him to be sitting back at home watching, you know, Iditarod highlights on TV, because I know, you know, he'd much rather be out there on the trail having fun with the rest of us.
Well, you know, the reason I bring this up, Hugh, is we really hit home last show about the lifestyle of mushing. And I bring this up because it's difficult to get out of, and it's not something you can just walk away from, like, you know, at the job at the plant. This is something that is kind of ingrained in us, and we've become part of it, and it's just, you know, so enthralled with us 24/7. And that's what I'm trying to paint a picture of. It's not just something you can easily walk away from, is it?
No, that's, I think, for many of us, racing is an excuse to live the lifestyle, to be quite honest. I mean, there's a reason why it's October 13th, and I'm, you know, sitting in my bed at 4 o'clock in the morning waiting for the dawn of the day so I can get out there and hook up a team when the snow is nice and crisp on the trail. And, you know, race time is months away, but that's the farthest thing from my mind right now. I just want to be out on the trail having fun with my buddies. And those are the people who make it in this sport or lifestyle, aren't necessarily the ones that want to race and win and all that. They're the ones that just want to be out there and, you know, enjoy the woods with their buddies and explore. That's the beauty of the trails I'm on this week. They're all new to me, and I'm having just as much fun as the dogs, checking out all the new sights and smells and, you know, all the wildlife and everything.
So, and that's what the Today Show is about, is that early season training. I know that you guys got a little bit of snow here this past week. Tell us about the conditions up in Tok. Here in Willow, we haven't got any snow yet, and most of southern Alaska hasn't seen much snow at all. What is it like right now up there in your neck of the woods?
We only got about 6 to 8 inches, depending on how close you get to the hills. Just to the southwestern side of the highway, if people are familiar with Tok. I'm a little bit goofing ahead. My main goal every year, to be quite honest, is I want to be the musher in Alaska that's on that sled more than any other musher. And that's part of the reason why I get out there when I can. Another part is I'm worried that the snow might melt and disappear, so I want to use the trail conditions while they're still around. You never know in this day and age. It might warm up and start raining, so I want to get out there and use that trail. It's obviously not a safe trail to be out there on a sled by yourself, so I double sled. I throw a guy on the second sled, my handler Eric, and he weighs in at about 230 or so, so he's a good anchor to have back there. And the trail's a bit slushy, and it ain't Rendezvous or North American style trail, but it's a good trail for these younger dogs. I've got 25 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds that I'm trying to toughen up physically and mentally, get a little bit more meat on their bodies as well. So I'm running them not long amounts, but quite often on a regular, 4 on or 5 days in a row, and then a couple days off, just to toughen their bodies in a little bit. My older dogs, they don't really need to be out there just yet. I got them in pens or running loose in the yard playing, but a lot of my younger dogs, they need to, this is like, two-a-days in football, before the season begins, so they need a little bit more training. But I'm not advocating this for every musher out there. I do have a bit of experience out on the trail, obviously. The trails around here are tight trails that I can hook a snow hook off to a spruce tree, because you obviously can't really hook it in the ground without enough snowfall yet. And I do have that anchor behind me, which helps. So I'm very cautious. There is a bit of overflow out there, but it could be good training for the dogs is the way I look at it. And you worry about the heat, too. I don't want to push them too hard if it's warm out. Today it was about 25 degrees out, which for me is getting to be warm, believe it or not, up here in Alaska. So I tend to like running them right around, 10, 15 degrees is optimal. But for this early in the year, man, I'm not complaining. I'm loving life. I've been training on the trails here in Tok for just over a week, and to already be on a sled, just, it's a wonderful feeling.
You know, that's what I was going to bring up. I know you just started running on the trails just a week or so ago with the ATV, and now you've moved up to running on the sled, at least for now. What is your approach, to start off at this beginning? I know you've mentioned a little bit about getting the puppies ready or the young dogs and, not run them too far, but when you're going into this, when you take the time off, in April or whenever you stop for the year, what is your approach towards the beginning of the next year in terms of early training?
Typically, I've discussed this with various veterinarians, especially Mike Davis, who's been studying dogs with Martin Boozer and Ellie Zirkle the last couple of years. And a lot of people, in the past would focus on miles, 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 and that's not necessarily the case according to what Mike has told me. It's conditioning as far as doing racing is a little bit more important closer to when the races are than it is right now. Right now is when all the mushers are gung-ho, just like myself. But this is actually a time of year where, if anything, you should try to do consistent training, but not go, too far if there's not enough snow to cushion the ground. I think the ground could be a little bit, if it's bare, without any snow, it could be a bit tough on the dog's legs and wrists and shoulders and all that. So I'm fortunate that we have snow here so I can take it easy. And being a long-distance musher, I don't let the dogs run wide open anyways. I want a nice, consistent trot is what I'm looking for, a team that knows how to contain it, control itself on the trail. And if anything, I'm just trying to develop good habits with the dogs. As far as consistent speeds and all that. I'm not too big on all that sort of stuff. I'm not really a paper person who's going to be writing down every single stat that the dog's done. A lot of people do that. For me, I'm looking at dogs more from what I see with my eyes on a day-to-day basis. And every dog has its particular habits and particular ways of training. Some dogs don't like to train that much, especially your older veterans. So those are the ones that get to play a little bit more. But I start off, like I was saying earlier, the younger dogs are going to have more consistent runs just to get them to mellow out even before you're taken off from the yard. You know how new dogs are when you first put a harness on them. So once the dogs get in a routine of running a couple days in a row, they learn to, you know, it's not as big a deal, and they'll save that energy for out on the trail where it belongs and not in the yard. That's the worst thing you can have is a dog that's going crazy in the yard, and then they get on the trail and they stop pulling. Those are not the type of dogs that are going to make it in the Iditarod, that's for sure.
So they have to learn to pace themselves, right?
Exactly, yeah. Right. And like I said, I'm the type of guy, though, I've got 5 different litters. I usually run the litters as a litter, say 6 to 8 dog teams, and that's the beauty of it. I can run 2 or 3 different teams a day, anywhere from 15 to 20 miles this time of year. Obviously, try not to run in the heat of the day, but eventually I want these dogs to know how to run in any type of trail condition. And that pays off in these longer races because some of these slushy trails where there's no dirt and there's rocks and all that, you know what, that's roan to Nikolai on a typical year. So you're going to see that in places on the Quest Trail coming into Trout Creek Cabin and stuff like that, where the trail can be a little bit dicey. So these dogs really, it's a disservice to them to be going in and putting in snow machine trails and making it nice and pretty and all that. That's for hound dogs. That's for sprint racing. For these longer races, you want a dog that can handle any type of conditions.
Right, right. So, you know, in all the times that you and I have talked, you've said over and over and over again that this is about the dogs. You want to talk about the dogs. So in this next segment, Hugh, what I would like to do, and maybe we can get this in a little bit on every show, is let's talk about the dogs. I know a lot of people follow you on Facebook, and they all have their favorite dogs, whether it's your old leader, Annie, or others. Let's kind of profile a dog maybe each show.
Hey, by the way, make sure you don't let Annie know she's old.
she's a great little dog.
I said that once about Lance's dad, Dick Mackey, and Joanne Potts, who runs the Iditarod. She said, don't you ever call him old man Mackey. I don't think he'd care for that. That's a lesson I learned right there.
Right. So who do you want to profile today? Let's talk about one dog in particular. Tell our fans what he or she is all about, how many races he's done, if he's done any, what's his quirks, what's his traits, you know, just kind of give a little biography about one of your dogs, Hugh.
A lot of people know about Annie and Walter and a lot of the ones that are more in the papers and all that, but I like to talk about some of my younger dogs because that was the neat thing about I was recently, they did a deal on Greg Sullivan and Mushing Magazine about the super dogs of Hugh Neff. And the cool thing was there were some nice, beautiful dogs in there. A lot of them were actually retired, though. And I've got another 15 to 20 that are, you know, I think as good, if not better. I mean, they're all pretty much out of Annie, her babies, or else Omen, who's a dog that I got from Lance quite a long time ago. But I'd say for today, one of the main cool younger dogs that I got is a dog named Rocky. And I had him in lead for the second run today, and he was just phenomenal. You know, we're going through slushy, muddy stuff, and he's just rocking and rolling right through it. That's the type of dog you're looking for that's, isn't timid on difficult trails. And the one interesting part about Rocky that I have to be careful about, though, is I always tell people to be cautious when they name a dog, because I named the dog Rocky, you know, after Sly Stallone. I also have another dog named Sylvester, but Rocky, actually, this summer, I caught him eating rocks. So I'm always try to be very cautious how I name my dogs. The Rocky's going to be a solid leader. He's only 2 years old. He did Josh Cadzow's family's race up in Fort Yukon last year, where I ran a yearling team. And he did quite good in that race, so blue-eyed boy. He's got the, you know, the Aurora Husky Gareth Wright line. He looks quite familiar. People know what those type of dogs look like. And along with his sister Ruby and Riggins, they're just they're all solid. And those are actually Annie's grandkids. Their mom is a dog named Juanita. But they're fun to watch because, you know, you can actually watch them grow up in front of your eyes, and it's pretty neat experience. And he's not going to be in the lead, obviously, this year, but I'll have him in the team and see how he does out on the trail. He'll probably do at least a few of the 300-mile races, if not Quest or Iditarod. But it's going to be an interesting year. I got a lot of youngsters to pick through, so I'm really looking forward to getting out there and playing with them in some of these shorter races this year.
You know, a lot of people have differing opinions about when they should run their dogs in the longer races like the Quest or the Iditarod. What is your principle behind that? Are you waiting for these guys to be three or four, or are you doing true yearlings like a year old?
I did take some chances a couple of years ago with Amigo and a couple of the younger two-year-olds. I took them in an Iditarod, and they actually, I think Amigo did Quest and Iditarod. But realistically, it's not a good idea. The dog's body is still developing. So I think three, realistically, would be a better goal, where they're going to thicken in a little bit. In the past, a lot of Iditaroders have had puppy teams. You know, they wanted to get their dogs used to the trail. Not a bad idea if you're going at a nice, mellow pace where they get a lot of rest. But I think a dog, a two-year-old, is similar to like a teenager or somebody in their 20s where they need more sleep. And I don't know if it's actually a good idea to be pushing a two-year-old dog at an Iditarod, you know, top 10 pace. So it all depends on what you're looking for. I'm a big believer in running and training dogs this time of year compared to, say, putting miles on them in middle of December when it's 30 or 40 below out, because you know what, you're fighting an uphill battle because you're going to be struggling the whole time to keep weight on the dogs. So to me, it makes a lot more sense run them consistently this time of year. Might not be as much fun if there's not obviously enough snow on the ground, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And then when the temperature gets colder, that's when you just let them hang out in the yard. If it gets, say, 30, 40 below, let them free run in the pens or whatever. Don't try to throw big training runs on them in the super cold weather, because then, you know, they're more likely to get a little bit skinny on you. That being said, you know, the way the weather is in Alaska, anything can happen. So you have to be, when you're setting up your training runs, I would just say side on the on training in warmer conditions than getting out there at 40 below, because a lot more difficulties are going to arise along the way at those temperatures.
So speaking of early training, I want to mention something that your good buddy John Baker, the Iditarod champion this year, said at the symposium here in Willow. He said that he starts out his dogs in one position, whether it be lead, swing, wherever, and they stay there throughout their entire time. And then when the leaders get old or retire, they just move up, you know, the next in line. I assume he was meaning the swing dogs and then so on and so forth. How have you approached that, Hugh, especially this early in the year with some of your young dogs?
Wow. Yeah, I mix them up, to be quite honest. I had an eight-dog team today. I had five dogs in the lead. But to be quite honest, if there was a person that I would love to write a book, though I know John more likes to keep things, you know, his way of doing things to himself, as far as his particular way of training. But I think John's that guy fascinates me, just with the, you know, the Eskimo people of the coast, the Yupiks, and they train in a very efficient manner. I remember John's uncle, Louie, a lot of people in Mushing know him, Louie Nelson, very famous elder musher. You know, just the way he was feeding his dogs, he would just walk up and each dog would just pick the piece of meat right out of his hand, and he would tell me all about, you know, how it's all about training. And then John, you know, John's dogs will actually lay on their backs and stick their feet up in the air, and he puts booties on, the opposite of the way most mushers do it. So stuff like that is just pretty interesting. There's probably a purpose to why John keeps the dogs that way. Maybe it's less thinking on the dog's part and a little bit easier structurally for him to organize things. But for me, I'm a little bit more spastic, obviously, and I want to have all the dogs and rotate them around and try to see, you know, in these races, oftentimes when you're doing a longer run, you're rotating your leaders around. So I want to know which dogs are leaders. And usually I tell people I think about 90% of your dogs can be leaders with proper training and guidance. And maybe they're not going to be a leading in front of a 16-dog team, but sometimes, you know, like, in fact, I had Sport, one of the dogs I got from John a couple months ago. I had him in lead today just in front of an 8-dog team going through about 8 inches of fresh snow, and he did great. So I'm always mixing them up. But in races, I can definitely see where he's coming from as far as trying to keep them in a structured order. And believe me, if people were going to get advice on dogs from anybody, I'd definitely listen to John over most folks, that's for sure.
So, you know, Hugh, in the summer months, kind of our downtime in terms of training or running, we're doing the chores around the yard, fixing the dog houses or whatever we're, you know, we're working around in the yard. What's happening this time of year in a top mushing kennel? I know a lot of the food's coming in and, you know, it's being frozen up and cut up and that sort of thing. Tell our listeners about some of the preparations you're making for the winter now that summer and fall is over and we're getting in gear for the season. What's going on at your place?
Well, like I said, I've got one more day of running, and then I'll give them a couple days off. I'd like to run during the week because it's safer, I think. Less people, snow machiners, or whoever out on the trail. Most of those folks, you know, the weekend warriors come out. And so I prefer to run during the week. That's why I train in Tote, because it's, you know, quieter than Two Rivers, say, or some of these other spots where there's a lot of mushers everywhere. I really, you know, I thrive off the peace and quiet. That's what I love about being on the trail. And this time of year, when I have the days off, when we're not, you know, bucking up wood or getting stuff ready around the kennel, I'll be driving 3 hours to Fairbanks. I got a pallet of Red Paw dog food I got to pick up. And I also will be, you know, as the temperatures are dropping here, I've been giving them fish oil. I mix in with the Red Paw and then or canola oil, some type of fat. But you're right, it's time to get the meat in their system here soon, so I'll be getting a pallet or two of meat as well. You know, that's when it gets really wild. So it's a little dicey there when you get the meat in their system. They can get a little pumped up. But with all the training that we're going to be doing with these younger dogs, I'd like to get as much, you know, meat on them as possible, as some mushers would say. So I like – some people, you know, don't want – you know, if you're running 20 or 30 miles, you don't want a real thick-chested dog. But I want a dog that's got a lot of power to it, you know. And that's why I'm going to try to feed them as much as possible here. I'm already feeding 3 meals a day. So, like I said in other talks in the past, I don't really feed huge meals. I just feed a lot of small meals quite often, what they're sort of used to eating on the trail.
Can you give our listeners kind of an idea about how much food that you guys use in a given year in terms of pounds, like pounds of kibble, pounds of meat, pounds of fish? I know when I was up there, you were talking about getting the last bit of fish out of the river that was you know, still running. How much in terms of pounds do you think you guys feed in a given year?
You'd have to. Some of my kids that are following me, they could study this in one of their science classes, perhaps. I'm not smart enough, you know, if you ever read that Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance book, I'm not the scientific mind, I'm the romantic mind. So I can tell you, you know, what the going, what they say in a lot of tourism talks, they eat about 12,000 calories a day when they're traveling, which is comparable to about 30, 35 hamburgers. But typically I'd say we're ordering 6 pallets of meat somewhere in there mixed with fat a year. Those are 40, 50 pound blocks. And then you've got, I don't know, 5 pallets of Red Paw, which are 40 bags, I believe, of 40 pounds a bag. And then there's so many different varieties of food we feed for the actual races that we have to cut up. And, you know, into little Snicker-sized pieces for the dogs to chew easier, whether it be your lamb, beaver meat, all different types of meats. And fish is also a huge staple. that the dogs will have as a snack. It's great for getting water into their system once it gets warmer out. But everybody does it differently, but I definitely like my dogs to look like little Charles Barkleys. I want them to be thick and fast. And that's the one thing I noticed from John's dogs. They didn't look like they were, you know, the fastest sprint dogs out there, but they look like they could just stay at a nice steady pace for a long time. And that's how you do well in these races.
There you go. So, Hugh, we have about 4 minutes left. I know you wanted to mention your school tour that's coming up in December, right around Christmas time in the Midwest. What is going on there? I know you mentioned it last week. Do you have any new information for us?
Yeah. I'm going to be starting in Rapid City on the 19th, which is the week before Christmas. I'm doing 4 talks there, which I'm really looking forward to. And then I'll be heading from there. I'm going to get a rental car, and I'll be going to the Minneapolis area for a day, and then I'm going to be up in Duluth for a day. So if I do have openings in the Minneapolis, and I could possibly do another talk in the Duluth area if anybody's interested, that'd be about the 20th or 21st. They could reach me through Facebook or my Hotmail. After Duluth, I'll be heading towards Milwaukee. Like I said earlier, I'm going to the game there on Christmas, the Bears-Packers game, which I'm looking forward to at Lambeau Field. But I will be in Wisconsin for a couple of days, so if there's any folks in Wisconsin, that's pretty late, pretty close to Christmas, so I understand might not be doable. But right around the 22nd, 23rd, if anybody's interested, I could probably make something happen. Just love doing it. I'm looking forward to it. This is part of the country that I really haven't been to, you know, and believe me, I travel a lot. And so it's going to be fun to get up north and see what a true Dakota winter weather is like. You see it on the weather map, and it looks like they can get some pretty rough weather in there in Minnesota as well. So I hopefully it's not too bad when I'm traveling.
You know, I lived up there for years. It's a different kind of weather than we have up here in Alaska. It's kind of that windy, cold. You're from Chicago, so you know what I'm talking about there. But, you know, Hugh, before we go, I got to give a little jab to you about that game you're going to. You know, you're a Bears fan. I'm a Packers fan. What am I talking about? A Vikings fan. But I think by Christmas, by the time that game's going on, I think the Lions are going to have it seamed up by then. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I'm going more for Lambeau and for the people. I love, you know, I was in Boy Scout camp up in Anago, northern Wisconsin, for close to 20 years. My dad was my scoutmaster, so even though I grew up in the Chicago area, I considered myself a wannabe cheesehead. And not saying that I don't love the Bears, but you know, Wisconsin people are fun people, and it's Lambeau's a legendary place. So it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance. My buddy Mike Pickle, who designs my hoodies and shirts and hats and stuff, invited me, and I'm looking forward to hanging out with him and, you know, having some cheese.
There you go. So you can follow us anytime. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're just about everywhere. Follow us on iTunes. Just search Dog Works Radio, and you can find our show as well as the Gypsy Musher right there. We will have a website very soon, gypsymusher.com. And if you're interested in those school tours, make sure you do follow Hugh on Facebook or go to his website, laughingeyeskennel.com. Hugh, anything else? We have about a minute.
No, man, I'm just thankful for, you know, decent snow conditions for this early in the year. And if any of my friends are ever passing through the Tok area, look me up and I'll show you around the hood. These are pretty great trails here. There are lots of them. It's almost like a maze here. And it's fun to explore every day. I'm really having fun with the dogs, checking everything out. And I'm thankful for you, Robert, because this is a great way to communicate with all the kids in the schools around the country that have been following me. So if any of you kids have any questions, just let me know.
And you can call in 877-552-3889. You can call in any time, and we will make sure that we get those questions on the air. Hugh, we'll talk to you next week on the Gypsy Musher. And, again, if you guys have questions or comments, make sure you pass them along. Hugh, take care and enjoy the training out there while you still have some snow.
Peace, man. Take care.
Take care. We'll talk to you real soon. This is Robert Forto on behalf of Dog Works Radio, and our co-host of this week is Hugh Neff. Iditarod veteran and UConn Quest veteran as well. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.